From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training centers in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska, this is Dog Works Radio, committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Dog Works Radio is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now, here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting from the KVRF 89.5 studios in Palmer, Alaska. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live site, and you can hear all of our podcast episodes as well as our live stream over on DogWorksRadio.com. It is an absolutely beautiful day here in Palmer, about 70 degrees, which is a little bit warm for us in Alaska, but fall is quickly approaching, and before that, or after that, we will have mushing season among us. So I look forward to getting out there with the dog teams again and running those sled dogs on our way to training for the Iditarod. On today's show, we have an award-winning author. Her name is Laura Caldwell. She has a brand new book out called The Dog Park, and we're going to introduce her right now. Laura, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. And I'm sitting here with my little mini golden doodle who's all of about 15 pounds. And I'm thinking, when you're talking about mushing, I'm thinking, man, if they had a toy division in low snow, she would be great.
Yes, you know, I believe I've seen pictures of that little dog on your Facebook page. Definitely a cutie.
She's also quite athletic. Her, you know, these small dogs can be more athletic than you think sometimes.
That is true. So, Laura, if you will, introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and what you're all about.
Well, thanks. I'm a lawyer in Chicago. My main job is that I'm a law professor at Loyola Law School in Chicago, and I run a clinic called After Innocence, where we work with people who are innocent and in jail. And other than that, my main sort of profession has been as a mystery writer and a thriller writer, this kind of thing. And then I got a dog. And had grown up with standard poodles, but then got a mini golden doodle to sort of fit my Chicago living, you know, often traveling lifestyle. And if you would have told me 3 years ago, 4 years ago, before I got this dog, that I would have been on the phone with you guys, I would have been like, I just don't understand, because I'm a law professor and I write mysteries. And now I love all things dog, and I'm having the best time, and it was such a nice sort of, just a nice sort of balance to writing mysteries and thrillers and working with people who are in jail and being inspired by all of it, but just loving the levity and actually the, you know, the profoundness, the profundity of, you know, relationships with dogs. It's just been fun for me.
You know, of course, I do this for a living as a dog trainer, and I never have a dull moment when a dog is around. They provide so much for us in terms of relationship, and they provide that little bit of escape from reality, don't they?
I completely agree with you. I'm in Chicago, but I have a home on the other side of Lake Michigan as well, and we're down on the beach today. And you guys have to let me know if this sort of book is already on the market, but I'm thinking, maybe my next book should be about sort of how dogs lead you into daily meditation. I mean, I'm watching Schaefer run down the beach to chase this ball and come back and dip it in the water and just having absolute joy with just whatever is right in front of her right now. And, you know, it is inspiring to see. It's been inspiring to me as some of the, you know, people I work with who are innocent and some of my other clients. It's just as inspirational to me.
That it is. So let's talk a little bit about your book. I believe it came out this past, just a couple of months ago, right? The Dog Park.
Just a few weeks ago. It's a, the Dog Park is about a couple who shares joint custody of their dog, their mini golden doodle, who is a boy named Baxter, but has a similar personality to Schaefer. I try not to do that, but this couple becomes, you know, they're just settling into normalcy. They're sharing joint custody of their dog. They both love the dog. It's the one thing they can't divide up. And so they have a nice, okay divorce, prickly maybe, but because of their dog. And then the dog is in a video that goes viral. The dog is actually saves a kid from being hit by a car. A high school kid catches it on his phone. It's on YouTube an hour later, and a few hours later, their phone is blowing up. So this couple dog becomes famous, just one small morning, as you can now do on social media. And so it throws them back together, and just all these secrets kind of come up. So it's really just a great sort of escape read.
Right, right. When you write with dogs in mind, I know this is kind of a drift from what you normally do. How difficult is it to provide that character of the dog? You know, that kind of personality on paper, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
I thought it was incredibly complex, and people who aren't dog people may laugh at me, or other authors who've done this say it's the simplest thing in the world, but I thought it was complex because how to tell it, right? So you are automatically, if you're a novelist, you have a number of choices about point of view. Do you tell it in the first person? Do you tell it in the first person, but also in the third person of some other people? Do you tell it all in the third? Do you mix it up in between scenes, in between chapters? Or is it all? There's so many choices to make, and then to throw this other creature that we don't actually know what goes on in their head.
Right.
They're not writing it down somewhere, dictating it, or texting, you know, talk to text. Like, so it's a guess. And also, I talked at length early with my agent and my publisher about, is this a book where that we have a third person in a dog's point of view? I think we all quickly said that's stretching it maybe for the kind of book we are wanting to write, which is sort of a beach read, a fun, pick it up. If you love dogs and you love a book that just hauls, you know, and a very contemporary book, that's what we wanted it to be. So what I settled on was in the main character, Jessica, who's divorced, and in the first scene, her, you know, dog or her husband shows up dropping off their dog. When she looks at the dog, often she will think that she knows what he's thinking, and I sort of put it in italics. And any dog owner, I think, as I've been talking about this book, is like, oh, right, right, right. You know those conversations you have with your dog where other people are around, and you don't say anything and the dog doesn't bark, but you look down and you say, oh, did you want, oh, the other ball? Oh, hold on. And someone's looking at you and says, like, how did you just have that conversation? But you knew what the dog was saying, and you knew what he wanted or they wanted, and then you had a conversation about it. So that's sort of how I chose to do it. And thankfully, I've been told by people who aren't even dog people, like, that it's sort of seamlessly, I'm hoping, you know, seamlessly sort of slipped into the narrative. So after a while, you don't notice where it's coming from. You just notice that you're getting the dog's sort of potential thoughts, feelings, you know, that kind of thing.
Sure. So you had talked about a minute or two ago, it's about a couple that are going through a divorce, and they have that joint custody of their dog. And I believe the dog's name is Baxter. Is that right?
Yes, Baxter.
Now, in your kit that you sent over, you talk about having kind of that strong, independent woman involved in all of your books. How does that play into this? Is the woman always right in this book, or does the guy have any chance at all?
No, never. I don't think anyone is always right. I'm a lawyer first, and I pride myself, and maybe I don't always get it right like anybody, but I pride myself on everybody's got a story, and there's always two sides, if not 15 sides to a story. But what I do like to write about is, I guess, women kind of discovering a moment in their life when they kind of, I'm not going to say grow up a little, but maybe shift paths a little, become involved in other things that are important a little. And in this one, this is a woman who moved to Chicago for her husband, and they got this dog, and they had this house, and now everything has sort of fallen away except for the dog every other week. And she's sort of deciding right at the beginning of the book, before the dog becomes famous, that she's going to top of her life and take charge. And the dog, in this, you know, crazy sort of way, helps do that. And I think that's pretty true of, I mean, I would guess, you know, I'd love to hear what you have to think about this. You're spending much more time with dogs than I do, and this is so rudimentary to me and basic to you because of the relationships you've had with dogs. But it just seems like there are, you know, you said it's always fun when a dog is around, but I don't know. It seems like always there's like a little bit of a lesson to be learned, and the more that people like you or I guess, just encourage those kind of relationships, I think we will learn a little bit more. And that's kind of how I felt about this main character in that book.
You know, I totally agree with you there, Laura. I have 36 sled dogs at my kennel up here in Alaska, and every day each one of those guys can teach me a lesson. They have the potential to do so. They all have individual personalities, and they all have those traits that really grab a hold of us, whether it's that good time or the bad time. They have that way of just kind of capturing our soul, so to speak, and just kind of holding on. And I think the important thing there is, as you mentioned, is just taking the time to watch and listen. And if you can do that, you can learn so much from our furry friends there.
Well, it seems like, you know, what you are team leading, as I do at a law school, as people do in corporations. And again, we're over, not stretching it, but maybe we're just, you know, we're taking this a little bit farther than most people do. But you are team leading, and you do have personalities to run. And when you said that 36, is that what you said, 36 of them?
36, yes.
Wow. I mean, that's a lot of, you are a football coach. And sometimes it's harder because you can't say, hey, kid, do you hear me? And pop them upside the head. You have to read more than most people. So your job is probably tougher, but they also can't, you know, speak as well as 18-year-old football players. But
that's right. And, you know, I tell our clients all the time, our dog training clients, that a dog has the mind of about a toddler. And if you know anything about raising toddlers, you know how difficult it is to raise a dog, especially if you have multiples in the house.
It's so true. I had my family members up with their kids, you know, two to four, five, six, that kind of thing. And, you know, the absolute intense awareness, the absolute intelligence, and then the absolute, like, what are you talking about? That cup I had, I just put it down, like, 2 seconds, I don't know where it is. And that's how Schaefer is, like, you know, with various things, because they are so present that you're like, hey, where's that ball you had 10 minutes ago? She's like, oh, boy, I don't know.
I don't know.
That was a while ago. Now, when you train, are you only training dogs that would be sled dogs?
No, we train dogs for our primary business is just basic obedience. You know, the typical pet dog throughout the you know, Anchorage and Alaska here, and we get all of our experience, of course, just by living with these guys, our sled dogs 24/7. But so much of that is just rolled over into what we do on a daily basis.
Do you have a weight requirement? You know, like, would you have been able to train Schaefer, who's a 15-pound mini golden doodle?
Oh, yeah. We've trained many a dogs, everything down to the little purse dogs, as I like to call them, all the way up to the biggest Great Danes, you know, the 150, 200-pound dogs. And, you know, it appears to me that the little dogs, they have the most attitude.
Yeah. Did you notice? But they also, it's so interesting to have you talk about this, because I took Schaefer to someplace in Chicago who trained a lot of really big dogs down to the small dogs. And any given time, they would take a certain amount, and they were the de facto pack for that week or two or three they were together, or the crossover. And she learned so much from them, and I believe them from her. Like, it definitely wasn't, you know, I think in the end, dogs prefer to hang out with dogs their size. Sometimes if they're roughing around at a park, they know if they're their size, they want to hurt someone else or whatever. But it was in terms of training and just learning from other dogs, I thought that was just invaluable, you know?
It is. I'm a firm believer that they would learn much more from themselves than we do ourselves. We're talking to Laura Caldwell today here on Dog Works Radio. We're talking about her brand new book, The Dog Park. Laura, if we can, I am interested in kind of the basis of this book is this joint custody deal and Baxter's caught in the middle a little bit. I remember, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago when we first started this show, we did a show on this custody battle, so to speak, on dogs. Did you do some research on that, and what did you find out about that kind of struggle that goes on with the dog as pretty much the child in the relationship? One's going to the other, so to speak.
Yeah, you're right, and it's a very changing area of the law right now. I did not practice family law myself, but did a lot of research for the book and found out that that is one of the big questions that family lawyers are hearing from couples who are considering breaking up, having a separation agreement. If they're, you know they're going to get a divorce, it's a question that keeps coming up. And right now in Illinois, there is a case with a dog named Pepper, I believe it is, in Joliet, Illinois. And the couple was attempting to do some kind of separation agreement, settlement agreement. Dogs are technically in Illinois not viewed as children, so they're not. But the question everyone raises is, well, then is it property? And so that's what this lawsuit is actually covering right now. So the according to the news reports, the gentleman getting the divorce is very attached to the dog as he would be to a kid, and having a hard time seeing the dog, allegedly. And so his lawyer said, let's say that this is property and that you have to, and it is marital property. You did get this dog after you were married. And so the pet owner says, oh, I'm uncomfortable calling him property, but let's go. So that is in litigation right now here. And as I spoke with lawyers around the country, most people said, really, there's not a lot that's enforceable right now, but we put it in agreement. And what a lot of people have found is it's one of the agreements that people are holding up in marital separation agreements, that if you agree that I'm taking the dog, I have to a couple that she moved to Iowa, he was still in Chicago, and one of them drove 5 hours every other week to drop the dog back off. And they said they had fallen off of some other of their promises in their marital separation agreement, but not that one. So I see that potentially being an issue that could, you know, sort of arise and change as the law does. But so right now it's almost a gentleman's agreement. Most people are wanting to include it in divorce settlements if there's a dog and it's not easily, well, it was sort of yours, or it would be easier for you, or if it's not an easy solution, it seems like people are starting to put them in these agreements, and yet it would be tough to enforce if you were headed off to court. But again, just another sign of how people like you and I and whatever just come to love their dogs, and that becomes so important.
You know, that's interesting, and if we could explore that just a little bit longer, Laura, you know, when I think about that as if they're a property, I wonder how the courts would look upon, you know, the husband and wife that says, oh, we want to share the BMW or the flat screen TV or whatever, you know. It's very interesting when you think about that, because technically it's the same effect there, isn't it?
Well, you're right, it is. And actually, speaking from experience, I'm standing at a house right now that my husband, who's a friend of mine, and I amicably were able to separate in a divorce 7 years ago, and we've done it very nicely. We have a Google Calendar, and he gets the second home sometimes, and I get it sometimes, and we go back and forth. So you're right, probably the way to go would be to, I mean, it's just like cattle, it's just like horses, you know, so I guess take the sentimentality out of it. Probably that's the way to go. It'll be interesting to watch this case. I'll pay attention to it and let's check back in, because
sure.
You're right. And if you're not getting sentimental about it, and I think some people have been saying, but they're not property, they're family. But what does it mean? Does it matter at this point what we designate them, if it can be legitimately arranged to everyone's happiness, to everyone's, you know, hopes, comfort level, to everyone's, you know, benefit and good wishes? I mean, you're right. I'm glad you actually brought that up. I hadn't thought about it that way.
And then, of course, the other side of that coin is like often in divorce cases where you have to sell that property, whether it's that home or whatever. Then how do you do that? You know, how do you put a price on Max or Rover and say, well, we can sell Max for $1,000 and split the difference. But when you're thinking about your dog, that's tough to do. You don't want to let him go. But sometimes, again, thinking about property, and I hate to have that be, sometimes the case.
Well, you're right. That is how it's stated, right? And if one person needs to sell, they have to give notice And what would you do if it was a dog? You're right. But I kind of think, you know, anything can be contracted for in the law generally as if both parties agree and unless it's unconscionable. So I would guess if we all put our heads together, or if a couple or a family put their head together, it would say if X or Y decides to move out of the state or can no longer properly care for said Rover, you get 6 months to say, you know, you can't drop the dog and say, I'm dropping him off. That's probably how you would do it, just like you would do a house, actually. You would say you give 6 months notice, or 3 months maybe for a dog that you're moving for a job, that this will, your house will no longer be able to accommodate your dog, and you'd put terms in. I mean, I actually think it could be done.
You know, I'm thinking now, doggy law at Harvard and Yale and Columbia.
Oh, God, I love you. I like that. I'm always, you have to be careful about me. I take new ideas very strongly and tend to run with them. So I actually really like that, though. I wrote an article years ago, my only family law piece of work that I wrote was about postnuptial agreements, how people were starting to get married, and now it's pretty much you can do it. And at the time, it was very sort of, wouldn't that be strange if someone after they were married? But this is, we're kind of talking about it in the same way. Wow, how would we do that? But that is how the law works. And actually, I think one of the, you know, pretty interesting things about the law is I used to think it didn't accommodate or didn't mold to culture. And at least right now, I would be wrong because it definitely does. So I think we need to check it. Like, we should diary this for, like, every 6 months and check in.
There you go. You know, my wife, often my co-host, she's a paralegal.
Yeah.
So we're dabbling in the law a little bit every now and then. So you know how that goes when you have somebody that's in that kind of law profession.
Yeah.
Laura, we have just a few minutes left, and we were talking off air before we went on about a story you read about something happening on social media at breakfast and your famous buy dinner. What is that all about?
Well, I just keep noticing how you can, you know, get on your Facebook in the morning and see somebody's dog who, you know, what about the cat? I mean, someone's cat. Any video, it's hilarious because by that evening, somebody forwarded it to you on your Facebook and maybe there are 300 likes. And then you see, oh, that's funny, that's hilarious. And you forward it to one or two people. You normally don't. You don't forward these things. But you do, or you share it. And then, you know, end of the day, you're coming home, you turn on the news to see what's going on, and wow, lo and behold, there's that dog video that got sent to you, and you shared it with one or two people. And it just, I mean, it happens now. It's obviously our world, and it's fascinating. It scares me a little bit that you can, that abrupt of a shift in someone's, you know, universe and recognition could be that jarring, because I think it would be. But at the same time, it could be kind of fun and thrilling. So I just thought if the dog was the thing that became viral, if the dog, you know, if it wasn't you, if it wasn't so personal, it wasn't something about you but your dog, you could actually, if the dog was responding well to it, you could just sort of sit back and enjoy that. And so that's not exactly what this couple does. It's a little more complicated than that, and a whole bunch of secrets come up in the dog park, but I do think that is such an interesting concept that we're going to see play out for a long time.
You know, Facebook and social media in general, boy, what an interesting deal. I remember when I got on that, late 2008, it was so basic compared to how it is now. Now you've got the ice bucket challenge and the whole nine yards, and that's all you see. It just seems that things, the smallest things grow the quickest legs, whether it be cat videos or funny pet videos or whatever. It just goes crazy in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, I think it's so fun. And that's kind of what we wanted to, you know, show in the dog park was this is a heavy universe in which we live a lot of the time. But there's a lot of fun for play and, you know, interesting stories. And that's kind of what's coming up on social media. It's just really interesting stories that you would never have heard about because it was in a small town in Nebraska. But now you can hear about it by 10 in the morning. And again, it can be trending on some nightly news program at 6.
One last question for you, or one last segment, I guess, if we can, Laura. I'm looking at your profile here, and you talk about audiobooks. I love to ask authors and filmmakers and folks that do creative stuff, some of the behind-the-scenes aspects of some of that. What can you share? How difficult is that, reading your own work and being excited on the recording? And what goes into that? I know it's a heck of a lot of time and effort.
Well, thanks for asking, because I think it is one of the most fascinating, interesting, sort of new fronts and the way that people can get published now and actually get really an audience, sometimes sooner with an audiobook than a print book. Now, it is not more involved in writing a book, but in general, if you're writing a novel, the Dog Park that I just came out with is a novel. They don't want, in general, authors to read their own novels. They find actors, narrators are just much more successful. Maybe as authors, we're just too close to our material. Now, if it's a memoir, if you're writing about yourself or something that you experience, generally they do like to have you read it because you really did go through that. No actor could sort of fake it. So I did have the opportunity to read a book of mine called Long Way Home about a murder trial. I'm a lawyer in Chicago, and I handled a murder trial, I don't even say how many years ago, back in 2006. And thank God, a young guy was held in a jail cell for 6 years without a trial. And
wow.
So we're not talking about convicted and then in prison. We're just talking about in a holding cell. So imagine if you went out and jaywalked or something. In his case, he saw a fight, left his fight, but was picked up because he was near the fight. And 6 years later, he was still in a holding cell. So we, my girlfriend took on his case. I joined her, handled it pro bono, and wrote this book, Long Way Home, A Young Man Lost in the System. And when the time came to consider it for audio, finally, I had 12 novels out by that time, and finally someone said, you can do this. So I do have on audio A Long Way Home, so you can get it on, Kindle and iTunes and Audible and that sort of thing. And then now, though, my other books, my novels, are available in audio. Dog Park will come out on August 26th, and it's the most delightful narrator who makes me love my work even more than I than I thought I did, which is when you're an author and you finish a book, you're like, oh, I want to write it again. I just want to start over. And this narrator makes me go, oh, fantastic. It's a fun summer read. I love it.
Very cool. Laura, how do people get in touch with you? I know you are active on Facebook, but you also have a website, and are your books available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all those places as well?
Places on Kindle, iBook, iPad, all those general and in stores. And then lauracaldwell.com is the website. And what am I on Twitter? Laura A. Caldwell.
Laura A. Caldwell. And we'll pass along some links on your show page.
Great.
once this goes to our podcast section. Laura, it was a privilege. We'll definitely touch base again when we can talk about some doggy law maybe.
Yep, let's do it. I see this happening again. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and we'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.